supported radio. But that means we need you to support our work and help drastically shorten our fund drives by joining the KPFK Sustainers Circle today. You can pledge $5, $10, $20, or any amount you like, automatically collected each month to help keep the broadcast and all of the other KPFK shows on the air. Please go to kpfk.org and click Make a Pledge to join the Sustainers Circle and help keep KPFK's important, independent voices on your public airwaves. That's kpfk.org. Please sign up now, and thanks.
Hi, this is Kurt Elling. You're listening to KPFK, 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, and on the World Wide Web at kpfk.org.
Night on, lady bright, in the arms of night.
Cue the conga playing penguins.
Live at you.
Oh, yeah.
The program's about to begin.
Radio.
For the people.
Go.
Come on.
The Mojo Hour of Power.
Radio.
Rewire it.
For the people.
Oh yeah, it's the mother, what? It's the mother, it's the Pocho Hour of Power, yo,
man.
We live in effect.
KPFK 90.7 FM, I'm Jeff Keller.
I'm Esteban Zul, and we are...
I'm Lalo Alcaraz, and I can't believe the energy.
Well.
It's a Friday, 3 o'clock, what else are we going to do?
We just had some Mexican Cokes. Before the show.
Oh, no.
I'm just excited. No drones have exploded in California. You know.
Yeah. Where is I was busy learning is it Farsi?
Mm-hmm.
To show them where ICE headquarters is. But I never learned it enough. So just, pointing over there.
Yeah, I got stuck at American Sign Language. I can only say two words. And I can't even say them on the air.
I know which ones.
But you can sign them.
I can sign them. Yeah, you can see me doing them now.
What? No, you didn't. You talking about my mama? You better stop it.
Oh, my goodness.
Man, I could do the dozens in sign language.
What's going on, Lalo? What's happening, man?
Well, I did a great event yesterday. It was a press conference at Monarca Soul. Our guest from Monarca Soul, the store, the collective out at the Paseo Colorado Mall in Old Town Pasadena.
Uh-huh.
It's a beautiful store. It's going to be opening on the 22nd, actually. Everyone's invited. But we had an event for Viva Altadena, a group that is helping the Latino families of the Eaton Canyon fire in Altadena fight against fraud, because they're being, targeted. The 30% of families that live in Altadena are Latino, and they're affected by the fire. And so they are being targeted by unscrupulous, Esteban, use those signs that you just said you learned. Against these unscrupulous people trying to defraud the insurance payments for these families. So we're the group is called Viva Altadena, and we're going to be selling I made a new print for this effort, and it's going to be on sale at the event, the grand opening of Monarca Soul Collective at the Paseo Colorado Mall on the 22nd. And that's what I did yesterday. Also, I'm very sick, and I got a cold. I got that flu that's going around.
Yeah, man. It messes with your sinuses, so respiratory.
I am clogged up. I sound like I have like a chorus of ogres in my chest, man. It's terrible. Did I say ogres? I meant orcs.
Oh.
They're like, so.
Are you sure, donkey?
I spared you guys from disease and infection by not.
All right, donkey. What?
I think that's Shrek.
He's an ogre.
Oh,
or is
okay.
he a famous orc?
Yeah, no, he's an ogre.
Well, you sound more like Sylvester the cat to me.
Suffering.
I got too much bodily liquids here. So we got a great show. You guys doing okay?
I'm doing great, man. You know, I'll be at the Comedy Chateau tonight and tomorrow night. And last week's show was amazing. Crushed it. People came out. And let me tell you, man, I gave them the business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw the videos.
Oh, yeah. The one I put up on TikTok already got 10,000 views.
All right. That's good, man.
Yeah. You can get an abortion and get the death penalty, but be a pedophile and become president.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
That's the one.
That's the American dream.
That's the one. That's the Epstein American dream, right?
Yeah, that's right. You don't want to be an Epstein American, so.
Now, Epstein or a Trumpstein? One of the two.
Yeesh. Anyway, so, we've got a great show. We got Patricia Guadalupe. We've got Jesus Cruz. Now, there's not a more Catholic name than that. filmmaker, and we've also got people from, Moyer's got it handled, the play.
Real Women Have Curves.
Thank you. Oh, God. It's not like I don't know that play. Híjole. We got a surprise comedian, right?
Yeah. I'd say her name, but I always butcher it, so I'm not even going to say it.
She cannot identify herself.
She can identify herself when she get here.
Okay, that's good. All right, well, let's strike up the band.
Band?
Hail to Patricia, Patricia Guadalupe, Bojo correspondent from Washington, D.C. Hail to Patricia, she comes to spread the cheese. She comes with all the gossip, she's here to spill the tea.
Hello, here we are again. How's everybody doing? Well, I'm here in Washington trying to figure out what the hell is happening.
It's a war. It's not a war. It's a war. It's not a war. It's over. It's not over.
Well, since you did mention Epstein for a second, I will tell you what the one of the Iranian leaders said to Headset, who the defense secretary called Iranian leaders rats in hiding. And Ali Larahani, who is one of the folks of, I guess you could call him a spokesperson for the Iranian government right now, he said, our leaders are among the people while your leaders are on Epstein Island.
Oh, shots fired.
He said that. And because of what is happening in Iran and apparently the president has a really hard time trying to figure out the difference between excursion and incursion.
And nobody wanted to tell him.
And nobody wants to tell him. He says, we've been in a little excursion in Iran and a little excursion. If you look it up, excursion is basically, you know, like a three-hour tour on Gilligan's Island, some pleasant kind of thing. And incursion is what is actually happening, you know.
He misread the word, but nobody wanted to tell him he misread it, so he just kept calling it off.
And when we go to Epstein Island, it's a sexcursion.
And here's the other thing, too. Nobody wants to tell them that their shoes don't fit.
Oh, that's hilarious. Yes.
If you haven't been following, what's that about?
That's hilarious.
The president is a big fan of those wingtip floor shine kind of shoes, and he basically got all of the men in the cabinet to. He ordered a bunch of shoes for them, but he didn't ask for their shoe size. He sort of guessed at it. And the ones that go to Marco Rubio are way too big. And he doesn't want to say anything to him.
Oh, my God. You could float to Cuba with those.
A family of four.
Well, I heard he made them fit by stuffing the redacted Epstein files in there.
That could be, you know, because I was looking at that and thinking, even if you wore the thickest Nordic socks for winter in those shoes, you could still fit probably another foot in those shoes. That's how big those particular shoes are. And this is how ridiculous it is that one of the cabinet members, he didn't want to be named, but everyone's thinking that it's Lutnick, Commerce Secretary Lutnick, because they said that he left his $800 Louis Vuitton shoes at home and put on those. And so all of them are walking around with these shoes that don't fit them, including apparently a couple of them that are too tight. This is the kind of silliness that's going on over there. But because of what is happening with Iran, guess who's up in arms besides the people who don't like what's happening? The farmers. Farmers in the U.S. are all up in arms about this because there is now, right before planting season, an expected shortage of fertilizer because a third of fertilizer that comes to the U.S. that ends up in the U.S. goes through the Straits of Hormuz. And that is that little, like, 20-mile-wide part that Iran controls that is making gas prices go through the roof and is making the president consider lifting sanctions against Russia to get more oil in here and more petroleum in the petroleum reserves. All of the stuff that he said he was not going to do.
Can't these farmers just use all the bull crap that's coming out of the White House?
Well, they probably could if they went over to the west, to the former east wing of the White House. But that stuff is all full of asbestos, so that's probably not a good thing to plant.
Well, the craziness about the oil, though, is we only get 7% of our oil from the Middle East.
Yeah.
The rest we get from Canada and we get from Mexico.
And Mexico. Yep, that's exactly true. But, and you know, the distributors are the ones that are taking advantage of this.
Yep.
And hiking up the prices of gas. Because even if we got 100% of our petroleum from that part of the world, by the time it would get to your gas pump, it would have to go through a lot of refining, and that takes a while. So the fact that prices have jumped so much has a lot to do with distributors taking advantage of the situation and speculators.
Yep.
And there were several members of the cabinet that have oil money in oil futures. And whenever it goes up, they're making money. So, you know, anybody who says, oh, I blame Obama or Biden for this, or, you know, the former presidents because the prices are going up because they said, you know, Trump said that he was going to keep prices down. It has a lot to do with all of this speculation. And even Trump knows that the average person out there is going to start to blame him like they blame Biden when prices spiked during COVID, even though the president really has nothing to do with the price of gasoline.
Right. But what did Trump say, right? Trump said, high gas prices are good for the economy.
Yeah, he did say that. Because it actually is. High prices are good for his wallet and the other cabinet members.
We make a lot of money on it. We is not you.
And to add to the absurdity of this, if you remember last week we talked about Ben Stiller not happy that they were using Tropic Thunder clips from the movie that he was in to do a promotional video of what is happening in Iran. Well, now there's several NFL former players who are not happy.
Come on now. Come on. Yeah. My people.
Ray Lewis, Ed Reed, Cam Chancellor, Mason Foster, Kenny Bell are just a few of the former NFL players who are up in arms that the White House is using some of the footage of them hitting, collisions, catching, and juxtaposing it with bombs. And, you know, and Kenny Bell said the other day, you know, I was just scrolling through the phone, looking at pictures of dogs, and people are getting blown up with my video. It's like, what the hell? So.
And where's my money for using my video, damn it?
And that's the thing.
Using my likeness.
You can't use that. And the NFL, of course, is telling the White House, this is not. You know, this is not a game, and this is you're trying to use a video that you're not supposed to without our express permission and to pay for it, obviously.
And Trump hates the NFL because well, they famously excluded
him. He loves the NFL, but
he wanted to be part of it.
The White House,
they said no,
can't be using black people. Hello. Hello.
They can't.
That's
be,
DEI. Come on.
They can't be using black people like the NFL does.
Yeah, that's but you it. Know, but I bet you if he used a video of Tom Brady, you know, Tom Brady wouldn't be happy either. I mean, you know, the thing about all of this is the White House is treating this like some sort of video game. And already you have 11 service members who have died, 150 who were injured. And I'm not even counting anybody in Iran who has lost their lives, including all of those girls in that school that was hit by a Tomahawk missile coming from the U.S. that it turns out that it was because the White House had used old information that building is now a school. It used to be part of a military installation. And it became a school about 15 to 20 years ago. So this is the old information that they were using on. Part of the problem is that a lot of these experts within the federal government on Iran and cyber terrorism either got fired or were moved from their cyber terrorism or Iran jobs over to immigration, yep. You know?
And that's what happens when you got Jack Daniels Hegseth running stuff.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of him, he has banned some photographers from the Pentagon press conferences because a couple of them took some photos that he did not like.
Oh, was he drinking Johnny Rocker Red when they took it?
I don't like what it looked like. It was a bad angle.
isn't he pulling bonehead moves by actually having maps of military bases and kind of stuff behind him while he's having these
and including a map of a video game that he said was an actual map, which is not true.
He plays Stratego. I heard him say they sunk his battleship. He was pissed off.
There was a battleship that was he showed a drone video that apparently of some planes that were blown up in Iran that turned out to be a video game.
Yep.
You know,
have invaded Grand Theft Auto.
Pretty much. And this is happening at the same time that we're spending, meaning the U.S. taxpayers, billions every day.
I want to go to the party where he's serving a lobster steak.
Yeah.
Oh yeah!
What's that about?
If you haven't heard about that particular thing, he has racked up quite a bill at the Pentagon by ordering lobsters and steaks, putting in a bunch of renovations, including a makeup room in his office, ordering first class tickets for him and a bunch of other folks, including this is just, you know, just like what the FBI director was doing. But the Pentagon has always had a reputation of spending enormous amounts of money. And a lot of people really don't realize how much it is because most people don't know what is the average cost of a jet, you know, or a fighter plane. And so a lot of that cost overrun is hidden in all of these things that people don't really pay too much attention to.
I heard that a hammer at the Pentagon costs like $7,000.
What happened? Yeah. What happened to those? I thought you're cutting out all the fat. Where
are
they?
Well, yeah, those guys are probably hanging out, you know. And so they're spending money on really expensive types of food for everyday types of things, you know, and it's in the hundreds of thousands of dollars where, you know, and he doesn't even try to hide any of it. And then he starts going into a rant about how that's fake or, you know, earlier today he was yelling at some of the CNN people because CNN came out with a story about how the U.S. was surprised at how Iran is controlling the Straits of Hormuz, even though they've always controlled the Straits of Hormuz.
They're surprised. And
yeah, they were so, oh, really? They're in charge over there? We had no idea, you know, seriously. And so he went on a rant about that. These are truly incompetent people running things.
But like, is it true that when they were in negotiations, right?
Yep.
And Iran said, look, we're not going to pursue weapons-grade plutonium. We're just looking for infrastructure power.
Yeah,
and we'll agree to all these things.
Yeah.
And that's when he just dropped the bomb in the middle.
Well, no, they were supposed to meet on Monday.
Yeah.
In the middle of negotiations.
But the way it was all going, Iran was going to
right. But Netanyahu said, wait, hold up. This is going too well. I got to interrupt this madness
because it was.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. They were going to meet on Monday, and the Israeli prime minister, with the help of Senator Lindsey Graham, who gave him tips and pointers on how to convince Trump to go ahead, said on the Thursday or Friday before the meeting, no, wait a minute. And he convinced Trump through Lindsey Graham to go ahead with a preemptive strike. And then that's when Trump came out and said, I had a feeling that this was going to, that they were going to attack us.
He had a feeling because Lindsey Grinder Graham,
yeah,
he was on Grinder, had a feeling.
and Lindsey Graham was rewarded with a pair of Florsheim shoes, by the way.
And some lobster.
And a couple of days after that, Marco Rubio, who apparently did not get the memo, said, well, we got out there because Israel told us that they, you know, that this was going to be something that they were going to attack Israel. And so we went along with what Israel said. And of course, that caused a huge commotion because people are saying, wait a minute, since when does Israel run foreign policy at the Pentagon, at the White House? And then that's when the White House said, well, they were going to strike the U.S. They said they were going to, even though Iran had said the week before that Monday meeting, yes, we agree to all of this, and we're not interested in attacking anybody, especially after you did this last summer. So the incoherent and incompetent type of strategy that is coming out of the White House, where they can't even the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing, is making a lot of people very angry about this and, of course, very worried about it, right, where they have people even saying, oh, well, they might even throw a missile onto California.
Iran has no reason to trust the United States at this point because they've been betrayed when they were at the negotiation table.
Well,
then just a few days before they were going to say yes to everything.
Right. But
so
see,
they have nothing to lose.
But Netanyahu was like this. He said, look at Jared Kushner. Look at guys. You get to rebuild Gaza. So if you want to do that and build your golf course and your high rises, you got to let me do what I want to do.
That's why Yahoo is the Trump whisperer. Is that what you're saying?
And remember that this plan that Netanyahu has had for the longest, he tried to get. That was a party over in Netanyahu's office.
They bugged us again, damn it.
Yeah. Well, this plan that he was successful with Trump, he has been pushing this since George H.W. Bush.
Yep.
Way back.
Yep.
Okay. George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush and Obama and Clinton and Biden all said no to him. And he was just waiting for Trump to come along and just say, okay, sure, because he knew that he could manipulate him.
And he knew Trump could get financial gain.
That's, exactly.
Because Trump don't do anything that he can't make money off of.
Right. Well, and just like you said, Trump is interested in taking Gaza and turning it into part of his resorts, putting up hotels and golf courses and all the other stuff out there.
Yep.
That's all he's interested in. And so he saw a chance to go in there and expand his empire. And so did Netanyahu by coming up with this cockamamie story about how Iran was going to attack us. Iran has always said death to America and death to Israel. They have always said that. And so has Saudi Arabia, and so have other countries in that region. But that doesn't mean that they were actually going to do anything about it. That was more their PR kind of thing to keep their population supporting them. And
it's more of a metaphorical death.
Yeah, yeah. And
death to the policies.
And if you saw some of the protests, if you saw some of the protests in Iran, they had actually bilingual protest signs. Part of them in Farsi and the other part in English, depending on what camera was pointed at them. So it was just a PR thing. And of course, the regime in Iran is not something that anybody should be proud of, but it has not ever been the United States policy to preemptively strike someone just because you don't like them.
Right. And this goes back to Trump's first term when he pulled us out of the JCPOA.
I mean,
right. That was where it all started.
Kidnapping presidents. Can we go back there too? Because
this guy's out the box. And I mean, you know, what kind of regime change is it to take somebody out and keep the same people in there? Or like what's happening in Iran, you kill the leader who's been there for 40 years and they name his son, who's actually more conservative and more hardline than his father.
And you killed his dad.
It's going to last a lot longer.
Look what George Bush Jr. did. Or George Bush Jr. Yeah. When they said, why did he invade Iraq? His primary reason. They try to kill my daddy. That's what George Bush said.
If you remember, he went to.
They got weapons of mass destruction. No, it was really because they try to kill my daddy.
No, you know why? We had the receipts.
Well, and remember that he went to the UN. He went to the UN first, even though it turned out to be a bunch of BS. He did go to the UN first. And he did come up with a coalition that, okay, it included a bunch of countries that you're thinking, what? Like Honduras and Nicaragua. But he did try and do that, and it turned out all to be a bunch of baloney, but at least he went through the motions. This particular president, not at all.
Oh, no, he likes to kidnap people. He likes kidnapping Americans. He likes kidnapping leaders. He just likes to kidnap. Let's be real.
Yeah, and now he's saying to continue to distract people from the Epstein files. I am not going to sign any legislation at all related to anything until you pass the Save America Act, which is that a solution in search of a problem, which is basically that you have to show all kinds of forms of ID to vote and to register the vote. But it's already it already looks like it's going down in flames because there are several Republicans, including Senator Murkowski from Alaska, who says, I'm not signing this. I don't care. I'm not doing it.
The women are voting too much act.
Yeah, basically that, oh, well, you know, if you changed your name when you got married, oh, well, you know, because you have to use the name that's on your birth certificate, which is a bunch of baloney. But this is the hill that the president is willing to die on. And a lot of Senate Republicans and even House Republicans are saying, your poll numbers suck. We're going to lose big in November if you keep this up. And he's like, I don't care. I'm not doing anything until you sign this. And who knows what's going to happen in the next few days when they come back next week, because it's supposed to go to the House, to the Senate floor. And the Senate majority leader, John Thune, does not have enough votes to pass it. And he's butting heads with the president, who said, I'm not going to do anything else until you do this. Meanwhile, Senate Democrats are saying, we're going to filibuster that and everything else until Marco Rubio, Secretary of State and Defense Secretary Hegseth, come over here and testify about the strategy and how much all of this is going to cost and what is the end game of this whole Iran thing. It is a big mess in Capitol Hill, definitely.
Wow, Patricia. Well, it's amazing how we can fill so much clownfoolery into 30 minutes, but you managed to do it.
Yeah, and I don't have the Florsheim shoes to show.
What? You didn't get a pair?
I'm looking for a pair, but you know, the ones that he has, they look really uncomfortable. I don't know, man.
That's going to be his proposal to solve the homeless problem.
I think so. Yeah,
they live in those shoes.
Just give him a bunch of shoes, and everything will be fine.
You can fit a family of four in.
Exactly.
Yeah. Patricia Guadalupe, thank you so much for joining us on the Pocho Hour Power, and we will see you next week.
Most definitely. See what happens. Maybe there'll be an old lady living in the shoe next week.
Yeah. All right. We'll be right back with more Pocho Hour Power. Are we having the Speedy Gonzalez Sports Report? I really hope so. But we'll be right back with more Pochismo and guys, take it away.
For KPFK, this is Charlie Gonzalez. The men's Big Ten basketball tournament is underway. Last night, UCLA defeated Rutgers to advance to the quarterfinals round. They face Michigan State this evening at 6 p.m. on Big Ten Network. The Lakers are now sitting in third place in the Western Conference standings after last night's win against the Chicago Bulls. Tonight, the Bulls play the Clippers at 7:30 on FanDuel Sports Network. UCLA baseball is ranked number one in the nation. Tonight, they begin a three-game series against the Michigan Wolverines. In the World Baseball Classic, Team USA plays Team Canada today at 5 on Fox. This has been Charlie Gonzalez with your KPFK High Speed Sports Update.
Hi, this is Michelle Coltrane. Join me every Saturday at 4 a.m. for my show, Awakenings. We will be taking a musical and spiritual journey into the world of Alice Coltrane and beyond. That's Awakenings every Saturday, 4 a.m. on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles and online for the world at kpfk.org.
Shanti. Hi, this is Lonnie Jordan from the band War, and you're listening to the Pocho Hour of Power.
The Cisco Kid was a friend of mine.
KPFK 90.7 FM, the Pocho Hour of Power.
Orderly, get down this side.
I'm Jeff Keller, and I'm hyped because there's just too much madness in the world.
Oh, yeah.
Who we got next?
Our next guest is going to be Jesus Cruz, and he's a documentary filmmaker, but before we get to that,
yes,
let's just take a listen to the trailer of his song. His movie.
Come on, man.
And we're going to see. We're going to get to it.
Okay.
Come on, Jeffrey. All get right. off my back.
All right.
You know what? I just got here.
I never really considered myself like a DJ. We were just sharing music.
I'm not a DJ. I'm a collector.
When it comes to record collecting, this is something I do every day.
Everything that I collect has to move me.
Being a fan of sweet soul music, here you have this form of music that is expression of love.
When you hear the sweetness of the tunes, it was something that really appealed to me. And it's hurting me so. Record collectors, you know, they're pretty serious. And so, you know, if you don't have that stuff, that's pretty common. That's not rare enough.
We got to dig deep.
You are looking for something that you haven't heard.
This one goes real hard right there.
When you set off on this journey, you're introducing the Chicano culture and show the world what it is.
This is what we eat, sleep, and breathe this stuff. You're listening to my life story.
Yeah, man.
Oh, yeah. So that is the trailer for the documentary Soul Searching. We have with us Jesus Cruz. Are you there, Jesus? Jesus, can I hear
Unmic you? Your phone, man.
You got to unmute. Unmute it.
All right, how about now?
There you go. We hear you.
Oh, it was AirPods all the time, every time.
Hey, Jesus, man. So, yeah, I've checked out that trailer, and one of the things that you can't see when we hear it over the radio is that there are all these groups, like you're going to countries like Japan and different places, and people are getting down to this oldie groove.
But what songs are they getting down to? What bands are they getting down to?
I don't know. Tell us more about this whole thing.
Specifically about the songs in Japan. I was very surprised because a lot of the music that the collectors were taking are what are considered rarities. You know, not mainstream Motown stuff. It's kind of rare records, and that's what the whole documentary is about. But when we went to Japan, we were so surprised that the people were singing along to the lyrics. They weren't just mouthing the word. They weren't just like pretending to, because Ruben, one of the main collectors that we featured, he even put a rola in Spanish, and they sang along to it. So they did their homework. You know, they were familiar with the line of work of Ruben Molina, the collector. So that was what I was shocked, because, you know, I thought they were just going to know maybe some mainstream. They were singing a lot of like "I'm Your Puppet" and
"Come On Now."
And that stuff. So, but yeah, but just the fact that they knew the rarities, man, that's what floored me.
Right. So your documentary is focusing like kind of on the crate diggers and the people that are looking for the less known gems and finding these oldies that people don't really know about, right?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. It's a whole scene, and the West Coast is very prevalent. You know, there have been collectors since this music came out, but. Up until, let's say, the mid-90s and on, there's starting to be groups that would collect and put out compilations of a lot of these rare oldies, and that's what caught my attention. I got a CD called Lost Oldies Volume 2 in high school, and from there, I always wondered, like, man, who's putting these out there? And not only that, but, like, the artwork on the CDs were all, like, Chicano-style, like, prison-style artwork. So I was like, how does this connect with the other? So that's where my interest started.
Yeah, man. That's true, because, like, I remember, look, when I was coming up, back in the day.
Cruising?
Yeah, we used to listen to oldies all the time.
57.
But then 70. When hip-hop started coming into it, I was getting into that, and these lowrider heads that were older than me were like, why are you listening to that music? That's black music. I'm saying, what you talking about? You listening to oldies. What do you think that is? It's not old Chicago.
Come on now. That's the town I live in.
That's black music too. But it's like they were like kind of like had this identifier within themselves that this was strictly Chicano music. And how did you find that in your documentary? Or how do you talk about that? Because I mean, culturally, I mean, there were a few, Latino oldies groups, but predominantly they're black groups, right?
Like the Originals and that, yeah.
Yeah, and you got Hannibal the Headhunters and all that stuff or whatever, but.
Yeah, Sonny and the Sunliners.
Little Anthony.
Little Anthony, Dimas Garza, like there's a lot of soul singers, but. So we do cover that in the documentary about how the Chicano community adopted African-American soul music into their culture. We talk about how there weren't really scenes for Chicanos back in the days. We had like individual artists, and this is all Ruben Molina quoting that Chicanos kind of started using, like getting into the harmony groups into all that. So not only were they adapting that to how they grew up and collecting the vinyl, but then also when Chicano soul started with these groups, like we mentioned, Sonny and Sunliners and all these bands. So Ruben does talk about how in African American music culture, like, they kind of like innovate and move on. So from like doo-wop, you know, to funk to soul, or sorry, soul to funk, and then, you know, everything after that. But Chicanos, you know, we tend to stay in one place and kind of and kind of like, you know, get stuck in the past a little bit more. You know, we embrace the past a lot more.
Yeah. Now, are they spinning vinyls? Are they into vinyls?
Oh yeah, yeah. It's all vinyls, mainly 45. So that's that's where the rarity. That's where the rarity comes, because a lot of these records, you know, you get it for one song. And one thing I learned in filming this, we went over to the UK and Liverpool and London, and they collect the same record, but they want the flip side. They want the up tempo song. So now it makes that one record even more rare, and both, you know, both areas fighting for it pretty much.
Wow. So so Soul Searching, how did it start? How did this movie or this documentary start with you, and how did you get into it? What's the birth of it?
Yeah, so like I said, in high school, I kind of was curious about who's putting these compilations together. And I live in the Bay Area. And so I reached out to a photographer who I knew was doing some of the album covers for some of these collectives that were putting out oldies. And this was we started filming this scene in about 2012 in San Jose, California. I met up with a couple of collectors, interviewed them, kind of like, hey, how'd you get into this? Tell us about your past and all this and that. So that was a short documentary that it took us 10 years to release it, because there was a lot of factors that happened in between. But in 2023 is when we put it out there. And it was a short documentary, but it was the first time that I ever submitted my work to like film festivals. And we actually ended up winning in Texas. And so that kind of was like, okay, there's a lot, there's a bigger scene than this. Like, let's go from a short, let's go to a full feature documentary. And some of the collectors were like, hey, if you want to keep this going, you got to interview this person. And that's what led me to Ruben Molina in Los Angeles and his group that are collecting. And I just ended up following them. And then through Ruben, I ended up in Liverpool and London and Japan, you know, Tokyo, Osaka. And I'm like, man, this scene is deep.
It is. It is. You know, a lot of people are surprised about how deep the Chicano culture goes. I mean, I've been to Vietnam, and there's a whole thing over there, and it's crazy. But the thing is, like, man, you put together this doc, and I saw the trailer, and it looks really cool. I just want to know, what about screenings and when people can check it out, and are you coming back to L.A.? I know you got a future screening to be determined in Riverside, right?
Correct. Yeah. We're looking at spots to, and right now we can only do like small screenings, because we are looking into like the whole rights for the songs and all that stuff. You know, documentaries, sometimes you can kind of not get away, but you could use it as an educational, you know, snippet of a song or something like that. But we have to, like, okay, if we want to put it out to the masses, we definitely have to do it the right way. And
yeah.
Well, the music stuff. But for now, we're just doing small screenings, film festivals. We have Fremont, California coming up tomorrow up here in the Bay Area, March 20th. We're part of the Houston Latino Film Festival. We're actually in competition with the Luis Valdez documentary and the Johnny Canales documentary. So I don't know if we'll win that one. But, you know, it's kind of cool to be in that level, and that, you know, with those movies and those
people.
April 11th, we're in Portland, Oregon, and May 30th, San Francisco at the Roxy Theater. July 3rd through 5th, we're back in Japan. We're going to be in Osaka, Nagoya, which is actually a big lowrider culture area, and then Tokyo.
Wow, okay, man. So still, Riverside will be on the calendar, but it's not, it's not, you don't have the date.
It's not confirmed yet. I'm still talking to the venue. We're going back and forth. But we have Riverside coming up probably, I would say, May. And then we have Sacramento and then Philadelphia. We're also part of the Philadelphia Latino Film Festival, and those dates have not came out yet.
Cool. And, like, if people want to follow you and figure out if there's a screening near them, how can they look at that info?
Yeah, they can follow me at El Filmero. I'm on Instagram as El Filmero or elfilmero.com. That's ELFILMERO.com. And then they can see all my socials in there. Our YouTube, they can watch our old documentary. The short documentary is on there. It's for free. You can watch it and kind of get an idea of the stuff that we do.
So, but if people want the calendar for the film, they go to elfimeadow.com and check it out.
Right. Yeah, we'll have a link tree there with all the links of our screenings.
Right on. Well, Jesus, man, thank you for being on the Pocho Hour of Power.
Hey, thank you.
We appreciate you keeping
them
oldies alive, brother.
Yes, sir. This is KPFK 9.7. We'll be right back.
What's this thing I feel? Mom, where can she be? The right girl for me. Oh, I want.
Yeah, man. Make me feel like I'm cruising down Whittier Boulevard in my 65 Impala with my 520s and my Quakers and my little pearl white steering wheel. Just doing it! I don't know, Poach Hour Power. I'm here, Jeff Keller, with Real Women Have Curves Cast.
Right.
Yes, please introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm Yasha Alanis.
Laura Vega.
I'm Blanca Araceli in the role of Carmen.
Oh, dang! Now, people may not know that. This was on Broadway.
It was, but we are not doing the Broadway.
No, you're not doing Broadway, but I just want people to know that it was on Broadway.
Right.
And so your version is actually in English, and you have some shows that are going to be in Spanish.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So make sure you speak into the mics.
Right. Yes, it is.
All right. So talk about your role and how you got involved.
Sure. So, yeah, through a traditional casting process, I'm very excited. I've known about this play for a long time, so it's very rare that there are roles for Latina curvy women. So I was very excited to get cast. So that's how I found out.
All right. And your role?
My role is Pancha. And Pancha, let's just say she comes around. You know, she's a worker. She's a workhorse.
All right.
Powerhouse.
All right.
And I play Estela. I'm Yasha. I play Estela. And she's the older sister. She's the owner of the sewing factory. And she is somebody who makes it happen. And I really admire her. And I've known about the show since I was about 12, too, because it came out in the 90s. And
right, the movie.
The movie came out in the early 2000s, but right. The play came out in the 90s. And even then, it's more relevant now than it's ever been, which is insane. And I'm really excited to share this story, especially with this cast. It's going to be so powerful.
And talk about why it's more relevant now.
Well, with everything happening with ICE, La Migra, with like body image issues, especially with AI for women, I feel like we're even more self-conscious than ever before, and people are really perpetuating that. And this show talks about loving yourself and accepting yourself and being there for your people, and it's really, really powerful stuff. I'm really excited.
That's awesome. And you?
Yes, my name is Blanca Araceli. I'm playing the role of Carmen, and actually this is my fourth time playing this role in this beautiful play. Before I was in Pasadena Playhouse, then at the Gary Marshall Studios, and then I went, Theater, and then I went to Dallas Theater Center, and this time is here in Casa 00101. I'm so excited because one of the facts that we have, particularly in this this time in the play, is that I actually have the original sewing machine that her mom used in the sewing factory. I mean, the sewing shop. Its name is Catalina. And honestly, I feel the power of that machine when I'm sitting right on it. And it's so beautiful to see how much of this, the essence of the play, this is taking so much power with this crew and this amazing actresses.
Wow. And, you know, it was written by Josefina Lopez, directed by Corky Dominguez.
Woohoo!
Who Corky's been on the show many times. And this will be going on from March 27th to May 3rd. And you can get tickets at casas101.org. And again, it's going to be English and it's going to be in Spanish. And we're giving away two pairs.
Yay!
Two pairs of tickets.
Too cold.
Yes.
That's right. Two pair, man. Just call in to 818-985-5735. Don't look for the number. It ain't up. You got to know it by heart.
985.
What is the number?
818-985-5735.
I thought it was 985 KPFK.
Yes.
867. Yes.
And I think one of the great parts of this play, like now you mentioned, is for the first time ever, yes, it's going to be done in Spanish. Whole Spanish dialogue, everything in Spanish. Of course, the other version has a little bilingual and it's very fun. But this one is going to be April only for Sundays, April 12th, April 19th, April 26th, and May 3rd. So, people, pueblo, raza, gente, vénganse a ver Real Women Have Curves en español el 12 de abril, 19 de abril, 26 de abril, y el 5 de mayo. Pamba el que no venga. Tres mayas.
Wow. So, you mentioned that the sewing machine is the actual sewing machine.
Sí.
And has a name. And was named.
Catalina.
Like a lot of lowriders, and yeah, people just named their cars, right?
That's
right.
True.
And so, was that a common thing with these seamstresses? Or these sewers?
Well, I believe that some of them have that like a ritual, that uh-huh, this is my machine, nobody touches it, and I work on this machine. And actually, that's happened also in the play. When one of the machine goes off, it's uh-huh, really weird to have somebody else touch your machine.
Wow.
So, yeah. So it is, and I think one of the other things that we have in the play is that, well, we're going to be undressing ourselves in front of the audience. And yes, and that's a very strong and powerful message that when you do it, of course, you're in the play, you enjoy it, and because it's going to be 2 a.m, having tequila. No, we don't have tequila. We're dancing tequila. But what it is that for people who are watching it, honestly, you can feel this catharsis of the audience, like, it's almost like they're revealing themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I have women, beautiful women, yeah, come to me and said, how do you do this? I haven't seen my body in 10 years. And I'm like, what? Pues no sé, me vale madre, yo creo, no sé, I don't know. I switched the button that I'm leaving the play, you know? But I think this is a very powerful scene that we are not the perfect women shape, but if we feel so perfect in our own sense.
Yes. You know?
And as Lalo knows, I'm just going to the day where they do all Spanish.
Yeah.
I know that's going to be popping. And we only got one pair of tickets left just for
yeah,
Happy Saturday, congrats, March 28th at 8 p.m.
Nice.
Yeah, so call up. What's the number again?
818-985-5735. Or as Zoo will say, 818-985-KPFK.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, by the way, March, right, 29, Josefina is going to give a talk back.
That's
and
right.
You know what? Speaking of being undressed in front of the mirror, we have to pull this guy away from the mirror. Oh. Jeffrey's always in front of the mirror without any clothes on.
Oh,
because look, he's good
first
looking.
First of all.
Listeners, he's naked right now.
But I didn't want to tell the people that.
Josefina, real men have curves too.
That's right. I lost the bet, and you're not supposed to know that right now. All right. So tell them where they can get tickets, and
Yes.
And we'll close it.
Definitely. Please go to www.casa0101. Get all the information. They also have free classes. They have classes also for kids, for adults. They have writing classes. But the Casa 0101 is on 21, just for you guys to know, 2102 East 1st Street, 2 blocks from Plaza del Mariachi. So come join us. It's going to be also an art exhibit, and Real Women Have Curves are waiting for you. So come and join us March 27th through May 3rd.
Right.
Pamba el que no venga.
Okay. Right on. Thank you. Thank you all for coming down to the Bocha Hour Power.
Thank you
and sharing with us, because it's going to be a fun night, I'm sure, and a fun run.
Yes. Thank you.
And we'll be back with more Bocha Hour Power, KPFK 90.7 FM. Oh, yeah, this is the Poacher Hour of Power. Hey, we are killing it with these oldies, man.
Yeah, I mean, I'm my joints are starting to ache listening to these oldies too much, man.
I'm starting to grow a hair. I'm having flashbacks.
I need to stretch more.
Yeah, I know. But we're going to get next to our comedian, who I butcher her name every time. So I'll let her do
it. To the point where you refuse to even attempt to pronounce
it. Then she goes on stage and she clowns me for saying it. So now I'm not even going to say it. But no.
That's what you got to do, right?
But no, she just put out a special. So tell us about you and your special and where they can see it and all the good stuff about you.
Yeah, my name is Priya Gayadeen. I am a comedian. I just recently relocated from the Bay Area to Los Angeles. I started comedy in the Bay at the young age of 51 during the pandemic.
Oh, cool.
Because I realized that being stuck at home with my then 6-year-old son, one of us was going to need bail money. So that kind of what was my impetus into comedy.
So was the funniest one had to get out of the house first. And
that's
the,
right. Make some, yeah, exactly. And he was still learning his alphabet, so it was left up to me. So I started comedy in the Bay, and I've been doing it for a while and just put out my special. Survival Skills, which talks about my life being a single mom, growing up in Canada, coming from a Caribbean background, being part of a diaspora, being my days as a urology nurse. They really like that part.
Zoo just got excited right now.
I could see that, yeah. So it's coming out on YouTube very soon. It's in the final stages of editing, and I posted a couple clips on social media, and they went completely crazy. It's going like it's just breaking the internet there. It's just going
went viral.
So it went viral. Still climbing. 217,000 views.
Look at that.
5,000, more than 5,000 comments on one little clip. I thought this, you know, I didn't think it was going to go anywhere. And then I woke up the next morning and my phone was blowing up with, you know, comments and subscribers and followers. And so it's
crazy, isn't it?
It is crazy.
I had put up, I was at Johnny Gill's Labor Day party. And with Jeffrey Osborne and Cedric the Entertainer and just all these people were singing live karaoke.
Wow.
Singing Jeffrey Osborne's like, no. I know. We talk about Epstein so much. Jeffrey Osborne goes, no, let me show you how to sing my song. Right? So he's singing it, Johnny Gill sang his stuff. I put that up. The next morning, I had like 500,000.
Oh, my gosh. It's
insane. It's like 1.2 million right now.
Wow.
And then on Instagram, it's 2 million.
Wow. Yeah, it's still climbing on Instagram. It's like about 9,000 views already on Instagram.
How many followers have you picked up?
I picked up over 2,500 followers just from that one clip. And it's all people from the Caribbean, from all over the world. It's so great because I had no idea there were that many of us out there in the social media verse. And it's all these Caribbean people that have been now following me and asking what I'm doing shows in their cities. And, you know, so now I'm trying to put a tour together and get out there and, you know, reach these fans. So
because people don't understand it's worldwide. It's not just the United States.
I know. Yeah. No, one guy's like, I'm in London. I'm in Barbados. I'm in Guyana. I'm in Jamaica. It's just crazy, you know. Oh. So it's really, really kind of nice to see that, to kind of connect with my community, you know. It's so weird to do it over social media, but that's the era we live in now, you know, and I guess that's how you find your tribe. So so it's been an interesting experience, yeah.
See, so thanks to the pandemic, if it wasn't for the pandemic, you wouldn't even be here right now.
Speaking of catching your shows, when are you performing live around Los Angeles?
Yeah, well, I'm trying to book shows. I regularly work out at the Comedy Chateau where I met Jeffrey, and I've done some shows at the Comedy Store and the Laugh Factory. I have some road gigs coming up in April and July where I'll be doing some casinos here throughout California. But yeah, looking to hopefully book more shows here locally and, you know, try to grow my fan base even more.
Well, it's hard when Jeffrey can't pronounce your name, though.
That doesn't help.
I'm firing
him as my manager.
Oh, yeah. I'll be real with you. I suck as a manager. I mean, look at my career. I'm terrible.
You know.
Now, where can they find you?
Oh, they can find me on Instagram at Flawed and Fabulous or on Facebook under the same name, Flawed and Fabulous, and on TikTok as Cougar with a Cub.
Cougar with a Cub. I love that.
Yeah, I saw you guys' eyes lighting up there.
That's why I got my shades on. I don't want nobody to know. Hey, man, I want to thank you for being on the Poach Hour of Power.
Oh, thank you for having me. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, but you got to say your name at least.
That's right. I am Priya Gayadine. Let's all say it together,
Priya?
Jeffrey. Priya Gayadine.
Gayadine. See how you put a little flavor on it?
Yeah.
That's right. Priya Gayadine.
That's all. There you go. There you go.
All right. There it is. I'll never mispronounce it again.
Never again, Jeffrey.
Hey, I just want to say thanks to our guest, Patricia Guadalupe. Who's here? Who was the person that you had?
Jesus Cruz, baby.
And Priya Gayadine. Look at that. I killed it. Make sure you follow her on Instagram and on social media.